In the glittering world of 1913 New York, 25-year-old Anthony Patch lives in a peculiar state of suspended animation. As the sole heir to his grandfather's $75 million fortune, Anthony exists in the shadow of immense wealth he doesn't yet possess. His days unfold in elegant ritual, elaborate bathing routines, precise social engagements, and philosophical discussions about life's meaninglessness that conveniently justify his profound inaction. Anthony's apartment perfectly embodies his character, a space suspended between purpose and decoration. His immense bedroom, dominated by a canopied bed and adorned with a crimson velvet rug, speaks to his aesthetic sensibilities. Even his bathroom, equipped with an ingenious book holder mounted by the bathtub, symbolizes his approach to life, the appearance of intellectual pursuit combined with maximum comfort and minimal effort. What makes Anthony fascinating is his acute self-awareness paired with a complete inability to act on this knowledge. He speaks eloquently about his supposed life's work, a comprehensive series on Renaissance popes, yet not a single word exists of this theoretical masterpiece. His Harvard education and European cultural pilgrimage have equipped him with refined taste, but no productive skills. He exists in a gilded paralysis, terrified of aging without achievement, yet equally afraid of attempting achievement and failing. Isn't this perhaps the most insidious form of privilege? Not merely financial security, but the ability to dress complete idleness in sophisticated garments of intellectual pursuit while awaiting an inheritance that promises to make such pursuit permanently unnecessary. When Gloria Gilbert enters Anthony's life, she arrives as myth made flesh, a celebrated beauty trailing heartbroken young men who walk like caged tigers. Yet something has shifted. Once triumphant as the most celebrated and sought-after young beauty, she has grown suddenly anesthetic to attention. Gloria's appeal lies in her unapologetic self-awareness. She doesn't want responsibility and a lot of children. Her desires are simple yet profound: to sleep and to have people around her doing things while remaining graceful and companionable. She believes women should kiss men beautifully and romantically without any desire to be either his wife or his mistress. She sees herself as like Japanese lanterns and crepe paper, beautiful but ephemeral. What happens when beauty, Gloria's primary currency, begins to fade? Her identity is so entwined with her appearance that aging terrifies her, revealing her insecurity when she confesses, "I belong here. I've got a streak of what you'd call cheapness." Anthony and Gloria's marriage thrives on illusions of possibility. They rent a country house for weekend parties, with Gloria creating themed rooms while spending lavishly despite relying on Anthony's allowance. Beneath the glittering surface, cracks emerge. Arguments about money and mutual disappointment grow. Anthony's grandfather, who built his fortune through discipline, disapproves of their frivolity. The final blow comes during his surprise visit, finding the house in drunken chaos, sufficient reason to disinherit Anthony. Purposeless, they turn to alcohol. Their days become cycles of recovery followed by evening revelry. Gloria's beauty fades with her growing discontent, while Anthony resents her contradictory demands for economy amid excess. Their conversations become performances, endearments passing between empty hearts. Their decline mirrors America's journey from pre-war optimism to post-war disillusionment, with prohibition accelerating their downward spiral as drinking becomes both rebellion and escape. World War I arrives as both disruption and opportunity. At Camp Hooker, Anthony finds himself surrounded by working-class men he'd previously known only through service roles, an environment that could have fostered discipline and identity beyond his grandfather's heir status. Instead, he begins an affair with 19-year-old Dorothy Raycroft, whose worship satisfies his ego in ways Gloria's equal partnership cannot. Her adoration provides escape from his inner turmoil. In New York, Gloria remains isolated with few friends. Most men are at war, while former schoolmates have married. She wonders if anyone remembers her, or only the 17-year-old siren she once was. Anthony grows jealous as Gloria's letters cool. When Dorothy threatens suicide after a quarrel, he discovers her manipulation, leading to his demotion for drunkenness. The war becomes a catalyst, revealing the character's true natures, large-scale events forcing personal reckonings that might otherwise be postponed indefinitely. After Adam Patch's death, Anthony discovers he's been disinherited in favor of the family secretary, shattering his presumed birthright. This triggers a years-long legal battle that becomes the central hope around which Anthony and Gloria organize their increasingly desperate lives. Their finances deteriorate through progressively modest accommodations. Anthony calculates their dwindling capital will last just 7 years, a thought that becomes both obsession and torment. Gloria grows bitter as she goes without necessities while they waste money during Anthony's drunken episodes. The legal battle takes on mythic proportions in Anthony's alcohol-addled mind. Italy becomes his talisman, a promised land where intolerable anxieties of life would fall away like an old garment. The tragedy lies in how the inheritance possibility prevents Anthony from confronting reality. Rather than developing marketable skills, he clings to the belief his birthright will eventually be restored, as if by divine right rather than merit. As Gloria nears 29, she contemplates her life with dread. Her beauty, her only reliable asset, now feels threatened by time. She resolves to pursue acting, approaching Joseph Bleckman, now Joseph Black, for a screen test to capitalize on her fading looks. The screen test proves excruciating. Gloria feels immediately dissatisfied with her outfit, wishing for something more youthful. The camera's mechanical sound unnerves her as she moves awkwardly before forcing an artificial smile. When directed to react to her fictional husband's death, her voice sounds hollow and unreal. After days of anxious waiting, rejection arrives. Mr. Debris needed someone younger. On her birthday, Gloria collapses before her mirror, sobbing at the tiny wrinkles and tired eyes. Oh, I don't want to live without my pretty face. This moment crystallizes Gloria's tragedy. Having built her identity entirely on beauty, its inevitable fading leaves her without emotional, intellectual, or practical resources when her defining feature begins to fade. Anthony's deterioration accelerates as finances worsen. He trembles each morning, functions only while drinking, and visibly decays. His confrontation with Bleckman reaches a new low, hurling anti-Semitic slurs before receiving a beating that leaves him toothless and unconscious. Dorothy's unexpected arrival triggers Anthony's breakdown. When she professes love, he screams, "I'll kill you," before hurling a chair and blacking out. When Gloria and Dick return with news of their legal victory, they find Anthony sorting stamps and threatening to tell his grandfather, confirming his complete psychological collapse. The fortune arrives precisely when he's lost the capacity to enjoy it. The final scene aboard the Berengaria shows Anthony in a wheelchair, whispering tearfully, "I showed them. It was a hard fight, but I didn't give up, and I came through." This delusion represents the ultimate irony. He believes he's triumphed when he's lost everything meaningful. What is wealth without purpose? What is beauty without substance? The beautiful and damned remind us that external gifts cannot sustain us without internal meaning.